God body is simple. It means you see God when you look in the mirror, and that the body of man is God, and that there's no mystery God in the sky. You are God.
And we are back, the Anabolic Mind Show, where we're trying to merge health, wealth, and prosperity. Got an incredible guest today, Nazia Khatan. How are you?
Very well. It's in London. I'm here in London, so the weather's not great, but we carry the sunshine here and here.
That's what's up. But I wanted to first intro you guys. We had an incredible podcast convo on your podcast, and I just wanted to continue that over on this side. Nazia is an incredible trainer, super famous, super fit, can box, punching ability, she can levitate, and she can defy space and time. Anything else that I miss? What else did I miss?
Click my fingers and make myself invisible, stop the watch.
Can you change outfits by spinning?
Yep, all of it.
Oh, snap. That's a good one. That's a good one. So, but people don't know you, tell us about yourself, your history, how you got involved in fitness, you know.
Long story short, I mean, I feel like every trainer has a journey, something to do with them personally before they start on the fitness journey. And that's the best teacher, I think, experience-wise. I had the typical female syndrome, trying to look good, feel good, went through an eating disorder, had anger issues, joined up boxing. Funny enough, right, Mark, I interviewed Muhammad Ali's daughter, Leila Ali, when I was 17 years old.
Wow.
At a time we never saw any kind of representation of, you know, brown and black females. And that gave me permission to start boxing at the age of 20. So I had like lots of issues mentally to do with my self-image, my body image, and trying to be liked. And that caused a lot of psychological issues growing up. Going through an eating disorder at a very young age. I mean, I'm 38 now. I still have to manage my triggers and my emotional well-being around that issue. Mm. That's the crutch of it, really. And then being a Muslim Bangladeshi female, a South Asian woman, we're not seen in the fitness industry. So I embarked my journey in the fitness industry about 10 years ago. And it's overcoming all the issues that I've gone through, like depression, going back in time and addressing my eating disorder issues. And now where I am, it's been a long journey, but using neuroscience to understand how people's behaviors and their mindsets are when it comes to health and fitness, and getting them to love themselves internally and externally. And I don't know if you read it was an audio I read by Maxwell Waltz that really sparked off my thinking for myself. I started healing myself before I started taking people on a journey.
Right.
And what he said in that audio was, most of our problems stem from self-image issues.
Yeah.
How we look, what our monologue that goes on here when we're looking in the mirror. And I was like, wow, this is it. And I created Fitness Reborn from the back of that. And I created Fitness Reborn to really help me.
Right.
But I didn't realize how it was helping so many females. I was like, whoa, mind blown. So it's almost like hitting a jackpot without really realizing you hit the jackpot and you're serving other people. That's my story in a nutshell, really.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a very inspirational story. And I think that fitness professionals who actually go through some real world experience, as opposed to just being genetically gifted, those are actually the best trainers, because they can relate, you know, who actually went through the struggle, who actually have the eating disorder. You can much better address the client because you've been there. You know, it's coming from a place of authenticity. So, you know, I think that's incredible. I wanted to ask you, have you ever knocked anyone out before in the ring?
No, not in the ring. And I tell you why, because...
Oh, shit. You said not in the ring? You knocked somebody out in the street?
Yeah.
The way you said it. Oh, wow. Well, let's hear that story. Let me hear that one. That's better.
No, like, I know how to... No, that's going to make me look so bad.
No. Come on. That's a good one. We need that one.
No, man. It's embarrassing.
Okay. Just tell me the combination. Just tell me the combination. What did you use in the street? How did you knock them out?
I didn't knock them out, but I gave them a good a jab and a right hook. My hooks were the best at the time when I was in my 20s. I was mad. I was mad. He deserved it. It was a he. He deserved it. So, like, I don't want to go there because it doesn't sound very feminine. Like, okay, I'm not that person anymore. But it was done in self-defense. In hindsight.
Well, that's valid. Yeah, that's legit. Yeah, and it was a guy. So that's good. Kudos to you.
It was done in self-defense. And listen, my father has 5 daughters and 1 son. I'm the eldest daughter. And he brought us up like he would if he was to raise boys. And in the South Asian culture, we're talking about in the 1980s, even now, like having a daughter and then having 5 daughters is seen as a curse on parents in our culture. So the way my father brought us up was with such high integrity, morals, and, you know, ethics in terms of how to conduct ourselves in a society that doesn't give a platform for females, educated us, gave us everything that we needed, the things that he didn't have.
Right.
And what he taught us was always stand up for your rights, your own rights first, and always speak out for what you believe in. But I don't think my dad was ready to raise me. By the time I was a teenager, you know, I was questioning everything, life, authority, culture.
Knocking people out.
Yeah, I mean, I have a fighting spirit. We grew up in East London. It's like, I don't know how I can compare it, like Brooklyn maybe. You know, grew up in, it's the equivalent of hood, but not so rough. Mm-hmm. And as a young person, you know, racism was really, really predominant. There, visibly there, but nobody spoke about it. So we had to always be like on our guard as ethnic people.
So let me ask you, cut in right there. Do you think that, well, I'm going to ask you and then I'll comment. How much do you think race has impacted your career in fitness?
Oh, heaps, heaps. I mean, we can be here all day talking about it. Being a woman is one thing. Like, I had to face different levels of discrimination in the fitness industry. The first discrimination was being accepted, me in my brown, black Bangladeshi skin, being a Muslim female, for my parents to accept that I wasn't going to be, by the narrative, the linear narrative that they raised me or wanted me to be brought up by, right? That was one. The second one was in an industry that doesn't see females like me because it's very much predominantly Caucasian-based industry. Let's just say it as it is, right?
Yeah, it's real. That's real.
And that really caused a lot of setbacks for me because as I got into the industry, I was in denial that, you know, racism didn't exist, but I've experienced it all my life as a young person, where that whatever institution I've gone through, you face it and you don't talk about it because you don't know how to articulate it. But I was in the fitness industry for probably the commercial gyms for about 2 years. And I realized this isn't going to work out for me. Something inside of me said to me, just get out. I don't want to pay rent. I don't want to be selling my soul to the industry that doesn't allow me to do what I want to do. And when I took myself out of it, I realized, wow, there is actually no representation of Black and Asian or ethnic minorities in the fitness industry. Black people are more out there now in the fitness industry. It's become a stereotype. You know, black people are really good at certain sports, etc.
Right, right. And but then they minimize your effectiveness. Oh, they're just genetically predispositioned, so you don't get any credit. And that's what happens to me constantly. But go ahead, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Exactly. And then Asian people are put in as a category of as they're just great cricket players, and that's it. That's all you see. Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, I'm not doing this. And I pulled myself back and I started Fitness Reborn. I said, I'm going to do this on my own, having no clue what I was going to do. But all I knew was I knew I had a voice. I knew I had to show up. And I just wrote down on a piece of paper, like everything about me. And I dissected it. I'm not just a coach. Let's talk about all these issues that we haven't addressed, the hard topics. And the more I was doing that, not only was I healing myself, Mark, I was helping, giving people permission to heal themselves as well. Right. And in a way, it worked to my advantage because now I am one of the, I'm not saying the only Asian person in the industry. I was the first Asian person back then, 12 years ago, as a fitness coach. Now with Instagram, there's so many offers and there needs to be more. But in my niche, I'm the only one that's doing what I'm doing, that's connecting the neuroscience with the fitness, with self-love, with understanding how the mind works, and not just working on a physical body for an aesthetic look.
Right.
It's about how to feel good from inside and giving them the power to help themselves as well. So yeah, it's a big part, man, race and racism in the fitness industry. But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I started, that was 92.
Yeah.
You know, so it might have took me to really pop it off, to get some notoriety, maybe 95, 96. So, you know, I would go to these companies back then, you know, and they would call me too. Like Beachbody would call me and be like, hey, what do you want to do? And I'd be like, listen, you have to give me equity in any video that I do. You can't give me 5 cents off the DVD. That's what they were talking about. And they were like, why? And I was like, well, you know, I'm giving you the culture because look at the people I train. And they'd be like, who are you training? I'd be like, oh, Mary J. Blige, D'Angelo, you know, this person, Busta Rhymes, LL Cool J. And they'd be like, yo, those are all black people. Black people don't work out. We can't give you that type of money. It's not going to resonate. They're not stuck straight up. Like back then, the racism was so in your face. They didn't even know how to censor themselves back then. Not to, because there was no lawsuit repercussions. It wasn't on video. So they'd be like, hey, you know, we're not giving you any money like that to do anything like that. Black people don't work out. We're not investing in black fitness. Straight up. We're not giving you any money. And, but I was like, we're the most obese demographic. So no, we're not interested in. And, you know, and then, you know, with my book, you know, HarperCollins, you know, I got the biggest advance ever for a fitness book at the time.
Wow.
You know, I get there, you know, they said, what do you want to do with the book? I said, well, you know, I want to shoot the pictures in the projects. I want to wear camouflage. I want a mixtape for the book. So you can download and get a mixtape, which was high science back then. That wasn't happening, to get a book with a mixtape, you know, because I wanted kids in the hood to gravitate towards it. They were like, you're trying to make this too much into a hood book. Your budget is cut. You know, I had to use my advance to do all of that. And I did it anyway with the advance money that they gave me. But that was a type of, or those are the type of obstacles, because it's not, hasn't went away. It's just a little bit more shielded or deceptive, you know. But those are the type of things that I went through and still go through. You know, I could remember meetings like right after Diddy Runs the City. You know, we got the highest ratings ever for MTV, the biggest turnout for the New York City Marathon ever to this day. And going into companies and them telling me, you know, your demographic is not big enough. You're not much of a fitness entity. You know, so it definitely plays a role in getting those sponsorships and getting those endorsements and then ultimately getting the message out. And then that's why I decided, you know, many years ago, I said, you know what? I'm not even doing anything mainstream conventional. I'm not rocking with these companies, and the technology caught up. So now you can actually do it yourself and be independent. But you know, it's quite interesting when you want to sell Ciroc. If I was selling anything that was detrimental, I have a deal instantaneously. Anything empowering to it's always some type of opposition, you know. So it's interesting how that works.
That's like, I mean, we need to speak to more people that actually have gone through experience to make us feel like we're not alone. Like when I say, tell people, when people ask me, where did the eating disorders stem from? I'm like, it stemmed from looking at magazines of seeing just white female in a body that I wanted to get, but it wasn't genetically something that I could do, not understanding it back then at 17 years old. But also, we don't talk about certain things. Like, example, I wrote a piece on this about the South Asian female, her eating disorders are invisible because it's always seen as a Western white woman issue, because there's so much research done on the white woman's eating disorder and the narrative of it. There's nothing for me to see. Oh, my God. Like, when I speak about my eating disorder, even a simple thing as anxiety and depression, people then tell me, because you spoke about it, I realize I've done the same thing. I've gone through the same thing. And it's so important to break your own ceiling and just talk about those things. And race and racism is still a very hot topic. Like, I stopped writing to magazines, like, back then when I had to just say, can I write a few things? The moment they see my name, they will either not reply or be like, okay, we don't need anything right now. But then the fellow colleagues that were actually, you know, writing to these magazines that were a different color to me, it was an automatic response. And I got tired of it. I got sick and tired of it. But now it's just like creating my own brand. It's like, you have to shout a lot, or you have to just
do
something. to show up. Now that I have them approaching me because it's seen as a, it's a need for fitness in different cultures and everything. I'm like, wow, this is really a big thing. But you have to just sometimes just stay quiet and just do the work, and then they get.
You gotta, yeah, you gotta put the time in and keep on grinding, definitely. But it's not just the fitness industry; it's like all of the social media platforms. A lot of, because I follow a lot of platforms just for business advice. I'm really trying to work on my business and get my grind together, as well as my health and wealth. So I'm on a lot of different platforms, just listening, you know, like on Clubhouse or whatever. So I'll get on like the top, you know, business platforms on there, and when they speak, the business people who are experts. They first start off with, you know, I'm glad I'm living in America where everybody has the same opportunity to be successful. They start the gaslighting before they even go into the actual thing. So then they're neutralizing you off the bat. And then they start talking about how you get your business together, how you do A, B, C, and D, how you get this done. And, you know, I'm listening to it as a Black man, and I'm like, okay. You know, Black man in America, you're what, 25% less likely to get a business loan. You're 30% less likely to get a homeowner's loan. You're 50% more likely to get a lower appraisal. You know, so all of these things. So when you talk to people about entrepreneurial endeavors and starting a business, you know, and people of color, and you don't address those actual issues, it's almost detrimental to the person, because now they're thinking like, you know, should I be in denial with myself? Should I not talk about it? Should I not raise it? And it's just this shield that goes over this issue, because people really don't want to address how systemic it is in every aspect. But in fitness, when I started, I was breaking a barrier every day, every single day. I mean, from running in Central Park with D'Angelo, we got stopped by the police every day for jogging in Central Park in front of joggers. In Central Park, in the broad daylight. What are you doing? We're both pouring sweat running.
That's tragic, man. I mean, listen.
What are you, you know, but I mean, and I say this just so people can really understand, like, you know, everybody's entrepreneurial journey is a little bit different based on their social status and situation that they're in. And that's something that definitely has to be accounted, as well as people's fitness as well, where they're coming from, their background, what they're used to eating, you know, culturally. All of these things have to get taken into effect and spoke about and brought to light. And that's what we're trying to do here at the Anabolic Mind. So I appreciate you being on.
No, thank you. I mean, listen, I'm glad I'm not in America, right? You guys have it hard there.
And
even in the UK, it's like a very mellow down, but you see, you feel it, right? And one of the things about privilege, we don't have the privilege of saying, okay, no, sometimes we actually lower our standards down to say we don't have the privilege to go to the gym. And one of the things I realized as well, just on this topic, when I was doing my research and just being observant of everything, how the hell can you be something when you don't see it being represented?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So there were so many things going off in my head. Like, I want to be the representation, the face of Bangladeshi female training, whatever it is, people that can relate to me, because then that gives permission for other young people. And we are in diabolical need with making our fitness a priority, especially, you know, obesity, heart diseases, strokes, everything, man. There's nobody there leading the way. And people don't do anything unless they see somebody doing it first, right? It's just the way human nature is.
Yeah, you follow by example. But unfortunately, here in the States, you know, the African-American, we're more of a revenue source. The fast food hits us with the fast food. Then we get sick. Then we got to buy prescription drugs. And they just keep circling us around. And then we're getting sick. So the medical profession has to take care of us. Yeah. You know, so they just keep – that's where we're stuck at. So it's actually – and that's why I tell people, you – in continuation to what we were talking about on your podcast, you got to be responsible for your own fitness, especially 100. if you're living in the United States. You can't just say, oh, they didn't teach me that, I didn't know that. You have to make an effort to learn, because believe me, there are corporations conspiring, just like trying to find out what's the right color, what's the right frequency of the music to get you to buy more, what's going to make you hungry after watching this commercial. There's teams getting paid millions of dollars to keep you guys unhealthy and to keep you in a state of not knowing. So you have to seek out the information and know that something is lacking. Visualize it, put it out, and you'll attract people who can actually help you in your situation. But to say, oh, you know, I'm anti-vax, you know, it's a pandemic, I'm not messing with the vax, but then go, hey, I'm overweight, I have a pre-existing condition, but hey, I'm not taking no vitamins either.
Oh, no, Lord, have mercy.
You have to be responsible for your health. Like, okay, if you don't want to take the vax, that's fine. Minimize your other risk factors. You know, that's your own personal decision, but still be responsible for your health at the same time. There's ways to be responsible. And that's what I'm telling people, because your health has so much to do with your wealth and how much money you can make and your productivity and how long you can make it and how long you can function at optimal. You can't just say, it's nothing. I'll go to the gym tomorrow. I'll do it later. Our health is not in a situation to sustain it, especially with in this pandemic crisis going on right now, constantly, that will be going on for the next 10, 12 years.
Thank you, Mark.
You know, people got to live in reality. Put the mask on. It's going to be around. It's going to be around, fam.
Oh, my God. We were discussing this yesterday. Like, every winter now, they'll probably put us in lockdown. This is, like, become the new normal. But that's not my normal. Do you see? Like, that's your normal. My normal is doing what I've always been doing and preaching. I'm okay up here. And when the pandemic started in 2020, do you know, it was like the most beautiful time for me to understand all the years of work that I've done. The inner healing, the shadow work, taking out the trauma. You know, I call it the, you have to work on taking the poison out of you to become a good person, a good human. And when 2020 came, I was like, okay, who am I now? Like, without the external noise. And it was such a beautiful thing to go here, man, like inside here, and just hold on to everything that you've learned to not participate in the world around you. And that comes from what you're eating, how you're moving, how you're even breathing. Everything that we do now has been stripped off us because we've gone back to this idea that we're just going to be on the laptop, on the phone. And I say to people, go and look at your ancestors, see how they moved, see how they thought about life. There's messages that they've left behind from us. Even like, look, I'm a Muslim, and we look at the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and there's so much beauty in the way he ate, the way he conducted himself, the way his mannerism was, his approach to everything. And it's like, you have to look at these things. People of history left us clues.
Yes.
We're here messing things up. We have the knowledge, but it's actually how much are we participating in the knowledge? And the body is the only vessel that you're carrying from the moment you're born, from the moment and the time you die. You're taking this thing with you, the flesh. And so if you're not happy,
you should know more about it than anything else, because it's you started with it, right? This is what I'm saying.
Yep.
You and know, people know more about their iPhone in 3 months, right? They get a new phone. They got that shit down in 2 months. 3 months is a lot, but by the first month, they actually have all the secrets unlocked. But you got your body for your whole life, and you don't know how to take care of your body. You know, there's a problem with that. And, you know, there's also a problem psychologically with the motivation level.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes people have cut me a check, even artists, you know, they cut me a check for 30, 40 grand. And they were like, okay, boom. I said, no, it's not. You can't pay me and get in shape. You have to actually do the work. You know, you have to work out. You have to eat right. It doesn't happen by just paying me. Or you have the people who don't want to pay, who have a resentment in paying someone else to take care of their body, because inherently they know they're supposed to be taking care of their own body. So they feel funny spending that money. But at the same time, you don't feel funny spending money for any other course or any other item that you want to get in shape from. So it's also the mentality. We skim. We drive a Benz to McDonald's. You know, putting better fuel in the car than you actually putting into your body, you know, stuff like that. So it's psychologically interesting. And food is the biggest drug in the street. Food is the biggest drug. So people use that as the pacification. You know, they celebrate, they have something to eat. They feel depressed, they have something to eat. So the way we look at food.
Yeah. It's the most accessible drug that they say out there, right? And going back to what you just said there about investing in yourself. We haven't been taught how to invest in ourselves. And then going back to another point you just said, people feel away when they have to depart with their money. I was that person once as well, because I didn't know how much a boxer, Mark. I thought I was God's gift to earth, okay? Walking around like I know everything. And then when I started incurring injuries, my mental health was deteriorating. I was like, I don't know anything. I actually need professional help here. So, you know, investing in your physical health, your therapist, psychologist, whatever it is,
your wellness, total wellness.
Like, You learn the hard way when your ego drops a little bit. And then now, look, I even hire personal trainers now, and people be like, you're crazy because you're a trainer yourself. I go, no, I'm a human before I'm a personal trainer. And that doesn't mean I know everything about personal training. I don't. I'm still learning about myself, and I still continue to learn about myself till the day I die. And it's about how I master myself from now till the day I do die. And that's the best gift I can give myself, is investing in me changing myself or bettering myself.
All right. With that being said, tell us about your courses. What kind of courses you got? What are you offering now? What kind of programs are you excited about?
Oh, man, my courses have been the same throughout since I started. All I've done is added modules. The more I learn, the more I can give back. That's the way I say it. And the more I learn and I give back, the more my prices go up. It's simple as that.
That's what's up. You're supposed to. Everybody else does it, right? What's your favorite course?
It's the 8-week one, actually. 8-week one is about, I divided my program up into base camp, learning about form and technique. I get to understand people's behaviors, the patterns. And this is all interesting stuff. I love my work that I do. I'm so passionate about it.
When
somebody comes to the doors, I'm like, I already know your mess before you already know it. Like, you know, when you just know and they don't know, and you're just like, okay, let's pull it out. And it's just being patient with the journey with them. I have to go on a journey with every single client that I take on. And it's fascinating because it really challenges me, man. Like, I have no idea the type of people that are going to come and sit with me. I get to choose who my clients are now. And I've always been very fussy from even when I was very low with income and no clients, I was very fussy with who I worked with because I didn't need quantity. I wanted quality.
Right.
Because these people are going to represent me, and I'm going to represent them as well in so many different ways.
Well, trainers, that's a very good tip. Say it again. Mm-hmm. You wanted quality clients over quantity. Yeah. You know,
100.
I never wanted to walk around with a client that was not working out hard or wasn't looking different from week to week. It's bad for business trainers to walk around with your client looking the same month after month. It will actually stop you from getting business because people are observing you walking around with the same person, not getting shape. So plenty of times when I had clients, I had to refund them the money. I said, listen, I'm doing this for my career. It's just like, you know, if you were working a regular job, I can't have any losses getting, you know, I need all of my clients to get in shape. Yeah. Here's your money back. You might need some therapy right now. You know, this is not, training is not what you need. You might need to get your mind right so then you can engage in your training. But, you know, continue. I wish you well. And continue your journey. And a lot of times they end up thanking me because they're like, they hit me back maybe 5 or 6 months later after they finish getting mad. They be like, you know what, Mark? That's what I needed. I wasn't being serious. And I appreciate you not taking my money because you could have and me not getting the result, you know?
Exactly.
And that's about having integrity in your business and how you do things. But that's a big problem with fitness, as we were speaking about on your podcast, training for client retention as opposed to training for the person to continue their journey or for the transformation, as I like to say.
Like, Mark, like, this is the way I see it, right? If you came to me today and you told me that your marriage is about to fail, you're going through a mental health crisis, you're depressed, you can't get out of bed, you're trying to, what you're saying to me is, help me because I don't know who else can help me. You're giving me your priceless asset, your vulnerability, your fragile moments, your weaknesses that most people don't get to see, even the close people. So you come to me, I have a duty of service to make sure that I fulfill that. And if I can't do it, I'm not going to fluff about with it. And it's hard to do it because sometimes, look, we all need to live and we need to put food on the table. But when it comes to the crunch, who are you when there's money and then there's somebody's life that you need to change? If you can do it, by all means, do it. But if you can't, you got to check in with yourself as a coach as well. And that's one thing I've been doing, the same as you. From a very get-go, from like 10 years ago, I've been training myself. Nazia, money isn't everything. Who you're training is going to be the one that pursues the other client and the other client. And that's where you get the quality clients.
Right. You got to stay focused on the big picture.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, and that's what sets, I know what sets me aside from my competition and the people that are doing the same thing. I only take on 5 clients per month. You either come on the 8-week program or the 12-week program, and that's it. It's a wrap. You come on when you know you're ready. I will show up when you're ready. And it's the same thing with that saying that goes, master only shows up when the student is ready, right?
Ready, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so the program takes people on a journey, and I call it the self-love journey. It's not a weight loss journey. A lot of people need to learn how to love themselves. From base camp, I created a module called recreation. Recreation phase is where they get to change their subconscious mind. So I give them tools and techniques that they can use, and then they move and they graduate to another module called the rebuild. This is where you find yourself as the best version of yourself. People can change within weeks if you give them the right resources, if you give them the right prep talk, if you give them the right way of thinking, behaving, changing. And it all comes down to the moment you wake up, what are you doing? Right? What are you thinking? Because naturally, our brains are designed to think about yesterday's mess, what we haven't done, negative thinking, the reptilian part takes over. And then to come back to the logical part, what can you do? Whether you're praying, whether you're meditating, whether you're breathing, whether you're going for a run. Like, I love training in the morning. That's my go-to zone. I don't train any other part time of the day other than the morning, because I know my testosterone is high at that moment. My mind is also doing all of this. This is the best way to, for me to calm it down, but it sets me up. It's like going into the different parts of my brain, the chemicals, and using it. And then how do I activate me as a human being to go and serve the world or the people that are relying on me to show up as well? So those are the components that I do for myself and I teach my clients. And then the reborn part is fitness gives us a rebirth, man, again and again and again. And that's what I discovered in my journey of depression. Like, fitness was my only savior at that time, when I didn't know how to express myself, when I didn't know how to talk, when I didn't know what was right or wrong. Like, who do I share that I'm going through a mental crisis here when it's not spoken about? Is it okay for me to feel sad? Is it okay for me to have these thoughts? And I knew I was in deep trouble at that time. And that was when I hit that point where I was waking up thinking I was dying, and that reflected in me having suicidal thoughts. And I was like, holy crap, this is the time I need a lot of help now. And even me speaking about it now, I feel so uncomfortable because it takes me back all that time when I was struggling. But the only stable thing in my life was fitness.
It's
And it
an
was
anchor. It can be an anchor for you, right? Yeah. I tell people that all the
100.
time. Yeah. When I was going through my
100.
divorce and I had my son living here with me, he was transgender. It was during the pandemic. You know, that was the one thing that I could use to stabilize myself and regulate was the fitness. So guys, you could definitely use the meditation, the inner journey, listen to the still small voice within, take that time out. To because we all know the answers. They're inside of us, you know. If we just look within, you know, we can come up with the answers and take that time to meditate. You know, the answers are inside of us, not outside on the external journey.
Yeah, and
So
during the pandemic, right, I knew I had the best of a tool, and that was I corrected my mindset throughout the whole years of going through the highs and lows. So when a lot of people were going through, a spiral, I actually elevated and I thrived. Like, I got sponsors from Adidas, things I never thought I could do, like reaching out to brands and not having a place where it said it's not possible. Like, I got a sponsored brand from EHP, writing for Adidas magazine, the website and everything. And that elevated my self-esteem to know what I had to give and what powers I had to actually just thrive, not survive. And I changed my whole way of thinking about the lockdown. So this time again, if we do go into lockdown, probably better equipped than last year, hopefully.
Last time. Yeah, during lockdown, like I said, I had custody of my son. I was divorcing at the same time. And we just taught for free 3 times a week for the whole lockdown. My son was hosting, he was reading the Instagram board, and I taught for an hour 3 times a week for free. So by, you know, maybe the second or third week in the pandemic, we had so many people on the live and have built this community. And my son, he speaks Japanese and Mandarin.
Whoa,
So
what?
he
That's
was,
the hardest languages to ever learn, man.
we put them in immersion very early. But so if they talk about me behind my back, I can't understand shit they're saying. It's terrible. It's the worst. I'm like, English. But anyway, so he was translating, you know, on the live. He was doing it in Chinese. He was doing it in Japanese, and it was dope, man. And we built up such a community. People still now are talking about, are you guys gonna teach again if we get locked down? And made friends for life and really connected with people. So, like you said, it's all about service. I just was like, you know what? People are depressed. You know, I can feel the energy's messed up. We're gonna do something for them. And You played the most foulest music for a whole hour.
Wow.
All kind, nothing but profanity rap. And we trained our free classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the whole hour. And that was one of my most awesome experiences we had. I was bonding with my son. We bonded with the audience. And it was really like, you know, in the midst of the pandemic, it was one of the most enriching experiences I ever had in my life.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations, yeah, man. That's awesome. That is really awesome.
Yeah. So you can do it. You can, your situation, you know, people don't realize in times of adversity, that's when the most money is made. That's when the most growth is made. That's when the most spiritual progression is made. You should embrace these times. You should embrace these times and look to jump into them with some sort of aggression. I think when adversity comes, people, they get too much defensive. Instead of walking it down, they have, you know, you go into it, embrace it, man, and you come out better for it.
It's a human nature, though, isn't it? Like athletes, I feel like athletes or people who have been in a situation like the military example as well, they know how to go forward, lean in rather than go back. But human nature is automatically, the resistance is always there. But once you know you can do it once, you can do it.
I don't even think that's human nature. I think that's once you're born, you get conditioned by people to do that.
I don't even think
that is our nature inherently. I think you get conditioned and people beat you down. And oftentimes when you have that type of spark within you, people focus on you just to bring you down.
I think a lot
of people get it knocked out of them throughout the course of their lives. But, you know, it's our job to help them, you know, recapture that fire and get that spirit and apply it to other areas of their life. Right.
Yeah, and that spark comes and goes. Like, by nature, I'm fire, but somehow I felt like my fire has been dampened a little bit. So I need to bring that up again. And I know exactly for me to do it is just to sit alone for a few days and I'll be fine again.
Right. Be still. Absolutely. Yeah. So what do you see? What do you see happening to the brand in the next 5 or 10 years? What do you see yourself?
Well,
where do you see us? Because hopefully I'll be able to get a workout with you in within the next 5 years.
In the UK, listen, I want my brand to be out there helping as many people as possible, right? My ultimate mission is to be known as the first Bangladeshi female that broke all the glass ceilings on all different levels, not just fitness. It's about telling people to go and live a life that's worth living. Right. Mm-hmm. Doing the things that you never thought was possible. And, you know, that's all I can do right now. Just be who I am and just show up. And now I've created the membership site on Winject. It's going to be interesting to see how much of an impact I can have on a larger scale. That was one of the downfalls I had in the pandemic, was I didn't act on creating a membership earlier on because I didn't know how to. I needed a lot of help. So it gave me time to actually really just sit there and take a break, switch my mind off the nonstop. But now that I've come into the membership, it's pouring into it and just seeing the difference it makes to people's lives compared to what we already have there. So in about 5 years' time, listen, I'll be doing tours. Mark, I'll be doing tours. Don't know what kind of tours.
Speaking into existence. You have to. Yeah, that's great. All right, so what's up with Winject Fitness? What do you think? What's going on with that?
Yeah, me and you are going to be as vibe.
What you got happening? Hey, I had to get a shameless plug in there. I had to get a plug in there for ourselves.
Of course,
right?
We're changing the world, right? Listen, we got this. What's your star sign, by the way?
Taurus.
Oh, okay. I'm a Gemini. So you're the bull. I have the fire. So we're going to be all right.
Yeah. We're compatible. So we're excited. We've partnered on our Winject Fitness. It's going to be an awesome experience. And we should be able to impact a lot of lives and have some fun at the same time. So I'm looking forward to that. And meeting you. So we get to meet hopefully next year. Yeah, we get to connect. So I'm looking forward to that.
Inshallah, it's the USA versus the UK.
USA versus, but yeah, I'm not going to meet you in the street though. I know better.
No, I'm going to try to stay
in the ring. Try to stay in the ring with you.
You know what's really funny? When I meet people for the first time, when I was younger in my 20s, and your physique is very different when you're a boxer compared to where I am now. And people are like, oh,
what would you say the biggest difference is? That's a good statement that you just made. What would you say is the biggest difference between your physique now and physique when you were boxing?
My physique looked like a boxer then. Like I had a tiny waist, arms, you know, I had a boxer's physique in a girl's body. And now it's just a bit more different because I'm not training. It's not the same training as I do before. I'm a lot more kinder to myself. I'm not obsessed with fitness because that can get you into trouble as well, Mark.
Yeah,
When you're not
you
resistant,
gotta balance. You know, my clients try to do interventions on me all the time, but I tell them I'm okay.
no.
They're like,
You
Mark, what are
know,
you doing? What are you doing? Are you training too hard? I'm like, no, I got it. I've been doing this for a long time.
yeah, when it's in your blood, it's cool. People don't get it. It's in your blood. You can't live without it. But I realized in the last 2 years, my fitness was a addiction like you would to alcohol or drugs, and it wasn't serving me anymore. So I had to then go back to ground zero and see where did this addiction come from? Is it an addiction? And the answer was always yes. And then I had to force myself to take a break. Like rest days. And as a female, we're always more hormonal than men. And we have to think about, you know, a monthly cycle, this and that, and beating myself up when I couldn't get a session in. It was a problem for me mentally. So, and the rest days was important. My physique has completely changed from where I was before. But I'm at peace with it, man. Like I'm doing it for me, not
It's got to be
anybody
fun.
else. Yeah, whereas before it was all about validation. I wanted X and Y Z to fancy me through my physique. And you're more than your body. You're more than what you look like, your appearance. And
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah, like when I used to meet people on the streets before, when I used to go to events and stuff, it would be fascinating. My ethnicity will always be the question. What's your background? All the time. And then when they find out I was a boxer, they were like, no, you're too pretty to box. Or no, you're this and that. I'm like, it makes no sense. Like, you put me in a category. You define what I should be like and what I shouldn't be like. And it's how do I say, redefining those stereotypes as a Bangladeshi woman. And then to be like, oh, okay, I'm okay now. I'm not going through an identity crisis. I'm chill. And it's just respecting and being compassionate to the journey and the fitness journey as well. You got to honor it as well, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think that's a fantastic way to end it, man. You got
Oh.
any parting shots? Yeah, you spoke so eloquently. You got any
Mark,
parting shots for people? Any
yeah, Mark,
advice? Any advice for
yes.
go trainers and then go regular people? Let's hear your advice for trainers. What do you give
Know who you're training. Know that these are people and not numbers, right? Not
them?
just a number that you can tick off. And for the regular people, get your ass off the couch, man, and go and do some running or something.
Go do something. That's what's
Do
up.
something.
That's what's up. Nazia, it's been a pleasure. Hold
Thank
on.
you.
I'm going to talk to you after I press the outro. Hopefully, I get it right this time. Let's see. Hey,
You
guys,
will.
I recorded a whole segment and forgot to press the record button. So I'm trying to get it right this time. Peace and love, fam. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you, Nazia. Watch your
Thank you
diet,
so
all you
much.
guys.
This podcast is brought to you by WinCheck Studios. We are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.